Hey, everyone. Welcome back to High Tea Hoops. This is Brian Beauchet at the Duke of Hoops, and I am joined by Skylar Smith. What's up, Skylar?
Hello. So excited to be back. It's been a while since we've had a player. I'm excited.
Yeah. Today, we have very special guest, Ashley Hamilton, who is currently on the BBL team, the Plymouth Raiders. So Paul Nicholson, friend of the pod, created the intro. Love that for Paul. And then also on Team GB. Ashley, welcome to the podcast.
All right, thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. So let's just kick this off. We do more, you know, all around type perspectives of players. So you just came off an incredible campaign for GB, qualifying for Eurobasket. But we're going to start a little bit earlier where tell us as Americans, what was it like growing up in the UK playing basketball? How'd you get into the sport? When did you first start playing? You know, Skylar and I were playing when we were like 4 years old, and we get people telling us, oh, I was 15 and they're still pros. So would love to hear about how you got introduced to the game in the UK.
I was 15, maybe turning 16, like at that age.
Seriously?
That's crazy. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. No way. Yeah. That is so crazy.
One of my biggest regrets is like maybe not finding the game when I was younger, or being in an environment that would have allowed me to find the game when I was younger. But then again, everything, you know, it's all part of the journey and part of the story. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I've told the story a few times. I actually found basketball by mistake. I had a detention in school one day, and I was hiding. I was hiding from the teacher in the gym. You know, I figured that was a good place to get away from everything. And there was a local team that was holding like a clinic, because like in the UK, we're still like very much at a stage where local basketball organizations are trying to introduce the game, you know, in neighborhoods to kids, whatever, to hopefully find some talent or, you know, some new, you know, build new fans or whatever, build a fan base. And that's basically what happened. And I happened to stumble across one of the sessions, and the coach saw me on the side, and he was like, come here, come get involved. And I loved it.
Yeah, loved so it. When did you hit your growth spurt? Did just a 6'7" guy walk into a gym at 15 and they're like, you need to start playing basketball?
I was probably about 6'5", 6'6", when I was 15.
Yeah, were you playing sports before that? What were you playing before?
So I started off playing football. When I started playing football, like soccer first. Like for
Europe. Soccer.
Yeah, when I was 3 years old. And I mean, I always knew, I remember when I was three, I knew I wanted to be an athlete. Like, I knew I wanted to be a sportsman. Like, that was my form of, like, you know, I wanted to be an entertainer, but that was my form of entertainment. Like, I wanted to be an athlete. And I loved it. I dedicated myself to it. Like, I had big dreams. I was going to play for the England team. I was going to go to the World Cup. When I was 18, I was going to do what Michael Owen did, score like two goals against Argentina. I was going to do all that. But, you know, I was doing good in football. I did well in Germany when we lived out in Germany. Then moved to London, kept playing in London, started getting scouted for a couple of teams here and there. But then when I hit my goal spot, like around 13, I maybe went from like under 6 feet to 6'3", 6'4", like in the summer. And suddenly I went from being quick and strong and athletic to very tall and dangly, and just like I kind of lost that control of my body. Does that make sense?
It very much so does. Hand, yes.
Yeah. So, and it happened very quickly. My hand-eye coordination went out the window. And the things that made me good at football and made me stand out, like, they weren't there anymore. Mm-hmm. So, and then it just, the adjustment period was too much for me. And I went from being like a standout to struggling. And that was around the time when basketball kind of came into my life.
Yeah, it's such an interesting theme that we see across a lot of athletes who are 15 or 16. Like, imagine if you are drilling in those shots, getting those 10,000 hours in when you're five or six. But then again, maybe you would have gotten burnt out. Like, I was a tennis player growing up, trained in academies, totally burnt out, never played tennis again. So maybe the fact that you had that athletic base, you got the footwork down playing football and then transitioned to basketball, maybe it helps. You never know when you look back like that.
Definitely. I mean, the one thing about basketball for me that really attracted me to it was the fact that it wasn't just a physical sport, because I was pretty good at like we also, when we went to school, like, they make you do other sports. So, you know, you try it, you did your rugby, you did your cricket, you did all the other sports, but like a sport such as rugby, or like I even played American football when I went to high school in the States. And you know, there's obviously there's a cerebral part of it, you know, understanding where to be, what to do, the plays and everything else. But the crux of it was physicality. You know, can you go out there and be physical? Can you go out there and put your body on line and be physical? And if that kind of comes easily to you, the sport, you're halfway there. Well, more than halfway there. You're a long way of the way there. Whereas basketball, like, there's that aspect of it. And you have to master, you know, the dexterity of the ball. Like, there's so many different things you have to master. So it was just a completely new challenge. And it was, I guess, in a way, it was similar to football. Like, I'd had a ball at my feet, like, all of my life. So controlling the ball and football was similar to basketball, but it came easy to me because I've been doing it my whole life.
Yeah.
So that challenge just to be able to, I knew that just to like to do what I had to do. Like, not only did I have to work really hard to excel, I had to work really hard just to catch up to like my peers. And that challenge excited me about basketball.
That makes sense. You mentioned going to high school in the US. So what was it like transitioning from British basketball to then playing high school basketball and then college basketball in the US? So what was it like for the basketball part of it? And then I also want to hear, what was it kind of like transitioning in the social aspect to American high school? I feel like we hear a lot from people who aren't from the US about, like, is American high school all that it's like cracked up to be in movies and TV shows, like the prom and the jocks and like the cafeteria lunchrooms and like all of the things. So I want to hear about A, your basketball experience, and B, your social experience in America.
Well, the basketball, it was incredible to be in the basketball world, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So straight away, like, you go to America and it's like basketball is everywhere. You know, there's gyms everywhere. Yeah. There's the opportunities just to play the game. There's a lot more, you know, accessible. And then I was in high school. I actually went to prep school on the East Coast, right? Mm-hmm. So all throughout my high school, you know, career and experiences, like, I was in nice gyms, I was in nice facilities.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big change, and I was, you know, it made me feel that, okay, I'm in the right place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, so that was probably the biggest difference. And then, it's just the game was everywhere. Like, it wasn't a struggle to, you didn't have to call people up. Like, you could just go outside and play ball. Like, I was in Boston in Massachusetts at the time. So, you know, if I went to the park, they're playing ball. If I went to the YMCA, they're playing ball.
Yep.
You know, when I go to school, they're playing ball. Like, it's not an issue to go get some competition in. And the competition is high. Like, everyone plays ball. Like, everyone,
even at the park.
The same way, even at the park. The same way, like, here, like, everyone plays football. Like I said, I've been playing football my whole life. If I could go, I could very comfortably, like, you know, like, say if we had the same thing here, if you could go to 24-hour fitness or LA fitness out here and play, you know, football, I could go do that because that's something I've done my whole life, you know. It's the same thing out there. So to be in that culture for basketball is, you know, it was dope. It made me feel like, okay, I'm in the right place. This was a good step.
Yeah.
Now, socially was a big change just because, like, obviously.
Prep school in Massachusetts.
In Boston.
Yeah, in Boston. Yeah. It was actually outside of Boston. It's a little city called Groton, Massachusetts. Yep. So I went to
Dartmouth, so I got a lot of the prep school people coming into college. Yeah. A lot of stories I heard of prep school and high school.
So I stayed in Mattapan, right? Mm-hmm. I stayed in Mattapan and then had to drive all the way out to the Sticks, and then I was at Groton and as a Lawrence Academy. And, you know, so I mean, it looked how it was supposed to look, like, on TV, how it looked and stuff like that on TV. So
yeah.
I know my experience is a lot better than, like, a lot of the stories I've heard about, like, all the different high schools out there in the States or whatever. But I think the biggest thing for me was probably, like, the education, because for us, we have our GCSEs, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what those are, but sure.
Basically, the best way for me to describe it is GCSEs is what you guys do from freshman to senior year. But we start 2 years earlier and we finish 2 years earlier. That's why a lot of kids, when they come from the UK and they go to the States, they have issues because the NCAA will say like, oh no, yo,
oh yeah,
you graduated when you were 16, like, you know, like, so you should be in college already. And they actually, they messed up a lot of my friends back in the day just because, mm-hmm. you know, the lack of education or lack of knowledge on how to transfer the system. But basically what that meant for me was when I went out there my sophomore year and I'd already done all the work before. So everything we'd done before, it was kind of like redundant for me. It was easy. So that was cool. You know, mm-hmm. I've never been big on schoolwork anyway. Like, I was good at it, but I just did it so I could play ball. And the way the system works in the UK is like, you could be failing the whole year. You know, don't hand in your homework, whatever. But as long as you know the test at the end of the year, then you're doing good. You know, mm-hmm. So America is continuous assessment.
Yeah.
Right. So I get out there, I see the work. I'm like, oh, this is easy. Mm-hmm. Right. So then, I'm showing up late. You know, I'm in a new place. I'm enjoying myself. I'm working out. I'm in the gym the whole time. You know, I'm with my new teammates. I'm trying to get used to everything. So, you know, I'm showing up late. Homework is there sometimes. Sometimes it's not there. The classwork is whatever. I'm acing the test. I'm doing what I know best, you know. Mm-hmm. Make sure I ace the test. I find out, you know, halfway through the semester, like, I've got like a 0.6 something GPA or something. I don't know. Something ridiculous, right? First of all, I don't know what GPA
is. You're like, I don't even know what this means.
I've already graduated high school. Why am I taking these classes again?
Yeah, I don't know what that is. So then, obviously, my parents get a phone call and I get the academic advisor telling me, like, what's going on? Blah, blah, blah. Now I'm in what's it called? Study hall every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
After, you know, and
that's the real high school experience.
Yeah.
Sit your butt experience. In study hall.
Sit your butt and study hall, do your homework every day, you know, work and when you know, get your grades up. So again, I was confused, but I'm like, yo, I'm doing good. And they were like, no, you're not. You gotta do good every single day. And I was like, okay. So then we got into that. That was a big change. That was the biggest probably culture change educational wise for me.
Yeah.
And once I got used to that, you know, that those type of things got better. But
Yeah,
I mean, it was amazing. I feel like I was very lucky because it was a prep school. So a lot of things that maybe you don't get in an ordinary high school or public high school, you know, they were mm-hmm. at my disposal. Even what I explained just now, like for me to be able to fall on my face academically the way I did. And it mm-hmm. wasn't because I wasn't capable. It was simply because I didn't understand, you know. So I had people that, you know, helped me through that system and help me get back on my feet. And I think about all the kids who didn't necessarily have that, you know, and they went to another high school. They were expected to be adults at a younger age, and maybe they would have flamed out or flunked out. And when the story is, everything is different after that. And, you know, you get labeled as a bad kid or whatever. So, you know, I was very fortunate. And afterwards, I started to make sure I made the most of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really funny. It's funny because it goes both ways. So I went to the University of Michigan for uni, but I went and studied in the UK for a semester. And I got there and I like couldn't believe that I didn't really have homework. And I just like basically was shocked. On my own for the entire semester until the end when I had to submit like a thesis and have take these insane tests. But it was, gotta say, it was lit. To not have to do homework and be accountable all semester, then all right, I'll get it together.
That's a whole other podcast.
It was fun.
Just crushing just homework.
Just make sure, just make sure that in England, they just care about the result. Just make sure that obviously they want to be a good student and everything else.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you just look, this is what you need by then, you get it done.
Yeah.
All right, cool. You know, so
it's self learning. I mean, this is turning into an education podcast, but when you go to school all day and then you have 6 hours of homework, it just is like, what are we doing here? I'm tired. Yeah. All right, let's go. Let's move on from education. I would love to go into that in another one.
Okay, let's move on. So you've played in the States, you've played in the UK, you've played around the world. This is kind of a question we like to ask basically all of our guests that have played in different places. Do you find that there's a big culture adjustment with every new team that you join, or do you think that it's kind of basketball is basketball everywhere?
You mean with the style of play or the living or what?
Everything.
Team culture, style.
Team culture, banter with your teammates.
Refs. Maybe not refs. I don't want to get you fined.
We're not trying to get you in trouble here.
Yeah. The refs, I don't think the refs over here are too happy with me because I kind of express myself sometimes. And, they're good guys, but I just feel like they can be a little better. Like,
Ashley, we just said we don't want to get you fined.
That's whatever. They're cool, man. I mean, there's always a adjustment. There's always a change. I mean, I guess like in the States, it's I don't know how to explain it. And I think it's like you said, it's like different teams in different countries. It's a little bit different, but like one of the things I always tell like a young English player or a young guy who's gonna go to another country as an import, or you know, the first day, like when you show up, it's important. You know, if you can dunk everything, you know, if you, you know, make sure that, you know, you go and communicate a lot, you know, encourage people, because like that's the first impression. Because people, when people are bringing you in, but they're basically, if you're coming in a scholarship, you're coming in, you know, as a player that they've, you know, they've spent money on to bring you in. They want to see that, okay, no, we've made a good decision. They don't want to be like, oh, well, give him a couple of days, or he's, you know, it's his first day. They want that, you know. So that's always been my approach. Whenever I go somewhere, I'm like, okay, cool. I have to make sure everyone knows that, okay, we brought him here for it. This is why we got this guy. So that's always been my approach to it, and it's worked out well for me. You know, and after that, it is, you know, it's basketball that we all go through the same experiences. We all, you know, well, similar anyway, that, you know, we're on a similar journey. Some people are more dedicated than others, but it's definitely an aspect of like familiarity with the others, because everyone kind of knows like you're here for this. Mm-hmm. So I've gone to like a lot of different countries, and a lot of times people will ask me, oh, what was it like there? Or how was it there? Or I've even been to like, you know, far eastern block, like Ukraine, and some people would ask me like, yo, you wasn't worried about going there? Or, you know, I've been to Lebanon, you know, and people, again, they were like, well, you're not worried about going there, Syria's right there. And I was like, well, no, because I always try to explain to people that my experience might be different from the average travelers. You know, if I just decided to go to one of these places by myself, then it might be a certain type of way, but every time I've traveled for basketball, whether it's going to the States for school or, you know, visiting schools in the States, different in different places, or going to teams, like, I'm already part of a group, you know? Okay. So, yeah, I mean, like, before I go there, I have contact with people. I know I'm going to have, there's someone who's going to meet me. I get there, you know, the media, the people know I'm coming. So when I come, it's not like I'm just showing up in the country. Like, it's like I'm part of the system already, you know? And then because I do what I do, I go over there, and then, you know, everyone in the system is like, oh, Ash is here. Now I have a couple good practices, and it's like, oh, okay, cool. Like, you know, he's one of us.
Yeah.
So yeah, it helps you adjust to whatever the culture might be, in whatever city you're in, or whatever country or team, or, you know, whatever. So it's difficult to explain what each individual place is like, but everyone feels there's a few things. Like every country they feel that they're the number one country in the world. That's number one.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not just the US that thinks that.
Oh no. Obviously the Americans think they're the best, Italians think they're the best, Spanish think they're the best, Ukrainians think they're the best, the Lebanese definitely think they're the best. The Greek think they're the best, you know, not just at the sport, but in the world. Mm-hmm. And then at everything. So they're the best people also. And
it
then,
seems like people in the UK, though, self-criticize more than other countries I've
like,
been
know.
Part of.
We know we're not the best.
I mean, we definitely know we ain't the best country.
just self-awareness as a country.
Yeah, but we're very proud. What else? There's that, and then it's just, I guess it's all part of like embracing yourself and you play, you know, who's been invaded. So it's been pretty easy, but like I said, I have certain advantages at my disposal.
Yeah.
Well, it's such a good lesson of basketball culture really does unite a lot of different cultures and people. And like, if you step on a court, no matter what country you're in, it's a very uniting thing. I know when, you know, I went to go play pickup basketball in Paris, and the way I get treated in a coffee shop or on the street or in tourist attractions, you know, I'm just a stupid American. They, you know, I can't speak French. But when you go on a court, everyone's excited to play. Oh, there's an American playing basketball, or you just, you immediately get integrated in, and well, see, it makes basketball really special.
See, that's great for Americans, and that's kind of like what we go through a little bit, like because like Americans, like they have that passport, they have that stamp. You're American, so we expect you guys to be good at basketball, right?
Yep.
So whereas British people, like from the UK, like Europeans don't respect us at all.
Americans
don't respect us at all either. So I mean, I think there's been a bit of a change over the last 10, 15 years, 20 years, but at first we did not get any respect. But that's why like it's been so important that British guys do well in Europe and do well when they go to the States, and cause we have to do a little bit more. But I feel like we surprise people with our ability, and you know,
I think it's growing too. I mean, having the success of Nick Nurse going from the BBL to NBA champion, Chris Finch just gets hired as the head coach. I think there's a little bit of a culture change where the BBL is more on the map. And kind of on that, we've had Christina Gaskin on and Melita Emmanuel Carr deciding to come back and play in the WBBL after going abroad. And you did something similar where you came back to play for the Royals. What excited you about coming back to the UK and playing in the BBL at the Royals and then now the Raiders?
Yeah, everything was timing. Like the first time, everything was timing. Like I was at a stage where I felt like I was being hired to help these teams and organizations fulfill their agenda, and I was always being left out on the sideline. You know, I kind of feel like I was never getting my opportunity, and it kind of comes at stage as a professional that you get recognized as like a good professional, but there's a stage that's like either they're gonna, you know, pay you what you're worth, or they're gonna bring someone younger in, or you know, to start off. You know, or they're gonna bring, you know, they're gonna take care of one of their guys, and because in the UK, like we didn't necessarily have that type of infrastructure or the opportunity for, you know, British guys to stay home and, you know, get their market value. We had to go and find solace in other places, in other countries.
Yeah,
and you know, I kind of got fed up about it, and I got frustrated about what was happening to me. You know. And always being overlooked, and then the Royals came out of nowhere, and you know, there were some people that I knew in the organization, and they were willing to, you know, give me my market value and take care of me, and it felt like it was a bit like I've always knew I wanted to play in the BBL. You know, it's just I didn't know if it would ever be a possibility, and this time it was the first time that, like, you know, and it wasn't about. I didn't have to worry about after coming and having an amazing year or do this or that. It was simply like, can I help build something positive here?
You know?
In the same way, like, you know, in other countries, like there's guys who they have jobs every year because that's where they're from. They're known to be from there. They're known to be professionals, work hard, and you bring these people in and we're building something positive for our teams. Now, as an import, you're usually just, okay, if this guy can fill that gap or this guy can fill that gap, did a good job, maybe we'll sign you another year, you know, or you move on, or there's no personal relationship there, you know. Sometimes some guys get lucky enough to build that or have opportunities, you know, but, you know, you never know how that goes. Whereas, you know, me coming home, like, I had the opportunity to be part of something bigger than that was just, you know, being a hired gun or whatever. So,
it was timing,
and, you know, it worked out for me to sign, but then obviously, you know, shit went in the toilet.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's part of life. But then this time when I came back, it was because, again, like, you know, I went out to Europe again last season, and I had a good season. The pandemic hit, and I had a contract to stay with the team. If we get promoted, we were on the way to get promoted. Pandemic hit, and all of a sudden, Europe was like, with me personally, I know what happened to a lot of other guys. They were like, it's always this way. Like, teams are always like, yeah, come on, we want you. We're going to give you, this would be a great opportunity for you. But I feel like teams, immediately, as soon as the pandemic happened, they used that opportunity to lowball players and to, you know, to use it as a opportunity to, you know, get guys at a discount. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's tough.
Obviously companies have to make adjustments and go on, you know, some guys went on furlough or some teams put people on furlough, but you know, like in the basketball world, for instance, there were some teams last season, like I was very in my team, they were like, we're going to pay you guys throughout it all. They put us on furlough. So we didn't get all of our money, but we still kind of got like maybe what anyone else would get, where some other teams, they were just like, oh, no, it's a pandemic. There's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
And FIBA also said that anyone who complains about not getting their money, we're not going to help because it is a pandemic.
Jeez.
You know, So for the next season, straight away, teams were like, oh, well, you know, we only got this much, but, you know, come on, you know, great opportunity for you and you should take it because it's a pandemic. Mm-hmm. And then Plymouth came and, you know, I wasn't planning on coming home, but they were like, well, we're trying to build something, we're doing this and that, and we're not going to lowball you. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll listen then. And then, so we started the conversation from there, and from there, you know, it advanced. So again, it was time and it was, you know, just want to, I feel like as a basketball player, as an athlete, you just want to go where you're, you know, where people want you.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you want to go where you're appreciated and you want to go and do a good job for those people. And because it's always tough when, because as much as you love playing the sport, like there's a lot of politics in it and, you know, it's not always fun. You know, you get satisfaction out of the hard work you put in for it. Mm-hmm. But when you can be in a situation where, you know, you feel appreciated and you feel like, you know, you're happy with the contract and the situation, then you can, you know, you can get through the year at a better pace than without maybe burning out like you might do in some other places.
Yeah. I mean, it's been great getting to know the Raiders organization, having Paul on. I interviewed Mike on the new Plymouth Raiders podcast he joined. He's a great guy. And you've had a really strong last month or so on the Raiders. I'm a little bit slower of a start. You know, Paul and I were tweeting back and forth, like, all right, we got to get you on once you get a big win. And then you beat the Lions and you've kind of had a series of bigger wins here. What has helped the team kind of rebound back a little bit more and start to play and move up the rankings?
I mean, at the beginning of the season, right, our team was a little bit incomplete. And that was, again, the pandemic. You know, the guys that we have now, like, they were actually going to bring him in before the season, but, you know, everybody had to make their adjustments.
Yeah.
And, but it meant that, like, a lot of guys got playing time, you know, and a lot of guys, like, we were out there together and we were battling. And even though we dropped games, which we could have still won, it allowed us to, I guess, have a foundation and experience, you know, so a lot of guys gained experience and confidence. And then so that when we did add some more reinforcements, like, it wasn't that we were replacing guys, but we were just adding more to the pot. And, you know, part of basketball is your depth. I think that's the most important part. You know, like what bench is going to come in the change, you know, who's going to hold the game when guys are in, guys are out. And it's so important. Like, we always say, like, as an import in Europe, like when we talk about our teams or whatever, like the imports kind of cancel each other out. It's like, it's the nationals that who really matter. It's the same thing, I guess, if you look at any league, if you look at the NBA or whatever, like the stars, like they cancel each other out. It's the team, like, you know, that really makes a difference. And it's the same with us now. Like, you know, like we have a team that is very competent, very strong. Like no matter who's on the court, and that's my son.
Yeah, he wants to get on the podcast.
I mean, he came over here just now, but now he's in his toys. and so us going through those fires without, you know, the new guys, you know, or the guys who have come in the last couple of months, again, it's giving a lot of people more confidence, and, you know, the knowing that if we are out there, that we believe in you and you can do a great job. So I think it's all kind of come together. And then, you know, over time, you grow, you mold, and we really have a great group of guys. You know, it's it's a really good bunch, and I think people care about getting good results, you know, no matter what the circumstances are that you have to deal with. And you put all those things together and it leads to more positive results than negative ones, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, that was a very well thought out, very well said answer. So I'm going to follow that up with a bit of a softball listener question for you.
Go on.
Give me a little break. Friend of the pod, Paul Nicholson, wants to know, who has the best shoe game on the Plymouth Raiders?
He wants to see.
Oh, hello. Hi. Welcome to the podcast.
He's so good.
Say hi.
Oh, he's so cute.
He wouldn't see so badly, you know, he's shy. But the best shoe game, the best shoe game, first of all, the best shoe game on the team is me. It's just I've kind of stepped away from the shoe game world, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
All of my shoes, first of all, all of my shoes are back in LA and London. And I'm not big into that world anymore. But currently it would have to be Andrew, Paul, or Phil.
Oh, I was hoping Phil. You wouldn't say Paul. Paul shows him off before
really
games.
Just, he wanted really to. He was just giving you the oop to like say him in this one. So I was kind of hoping you just wouldn't.
I've got to give him his props, man. I've got to give him his credit. You know, he puts the time in. He finds him. You know, they look good in him too. And what I like about Paul is that, you know, he'll do different colors also. You know, so I like people that are a bit creative with it too. Mm-hmm. And so I like that a lot. Andrew, you know, he's a vet, and he don't count though because he had a Nike deal. So you know,
doesn't count.
Yeah, you don't count. He's cheating, but still, shoot, you know, good shoe collection. And like I said, Phil's a sleeper just because Phil's our GM. Just because he doesn't necessarily have basketball shoes, but he has that. You know, he's got all the Air Maxes. He's got like a lot of variety. And if I was to get back in the shoe game, like my own style now, back in the day I did the Jordans, I had all the J's. Now I wouldn't personally buy the J's. I'd buy like, you know, lifestyle trainers. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't just get like the same. Like I think when I was younger, my style was more about like, okay, what's hot? I need that. Right? But now I want something that's hot, but most people might not have, you know, so something a little bit different or like a classic shoe, whatever. Like I remember like one of the ones I was most proud about, like I played one of my high school, no, one of my college, like my sophomore year, no, my junior year, I played it in like the Penny Fours. I was
dang
crazy because like, yeah, like no one had a penny. So me and my point guard, we had to make sure, and I was like, that was a big girl.
You stepped on the court and opponents were like, shit.
Yeah, because no one had the pennies. And when you're wearing stuff like that, people are like, oh, whoa, you got the pennies. I was like, yeah. You know, everyone's wearing J's or everyone's wearing like Bonds or
Kobe's. Yeah, the T-Mac 2s. If you were wearing the T-Mac 2s, I was so intimidated by you.
The T-Mac 2s were, are those the ones with the white swoop. And blue ones?
They were the white and blue with the swoop on the toe.
Man. See, T-Mac 2s were my first basketball shoe that I wore, like when I felt like I was good enough to have new shoes. When I first started playing ball, I started playing so late, I just felt like, you know, I was shitty, so I needed to wear some shitty shoes. So
it's a very funny way of
looking
at it.
I haven't earned these yet.
It's fair. You had to be good to wear those.
That is fair, actually, because I feel like if you show up and you have these like insane shoes, then you're just setting expectations high.
Yeah. Like, you can't wear arm sleeves.
Like, who does this guy think?
You can't do that. You can't do that. Like, you have to have some, I feel like you have to have a level of humility about me. And I felt like one day when I was good enough, then I could do it. But until then, no. Like, I found a pair of M1s underneath the stairs. Like, my dad had them. He never even played ball in them. I think he used to cut the grass in them in the garden. there was a hole in the side of the toes. And I wore those for like, until I was like 17 and a half, 18. Like, I wore those to five-star camp in Pennsylvania. I wore those to Adidas camp in Berlin. Like, I wore them everywhere. And then,
you got the upgrade.
I got the team. Yeah.
All right, on that line of questions, Nat Coombs, question this morning on Twitter, which I love, are along the same. Who's the best-dressed member of the Sky BBL crew? I think you showed up in an incredible turtleneck ensemble, which Skylar broke down. Yep. Absolutely.
Thank you, by the way. I appreciate the love on that.
Skylar's big on BBL fit, so loved the turtleneck.
Yeah.
Thank you. So I knew I wanted to be a little bit unique in that situation. I've seen some of the things that everyone else would be wearing. So I thought, okay, no. I made a decision to wear my glasses too, but I thought that no one wore glasses. So I thought about the outfit and I talked to my girlfriend about it. She was ready to go for it. So that one worked well. But I think personally, I would say Nat just because he makes it look so flawless and easy, and he's got experience in it. So, and he'll give you versatility. Like he'll wear the jacket one day, wear a sweatshirt. You know, I've seen him wear like some trousers. I've seen him wear some jeans. You know, some shoes, some trainers, and he's very comfortable in it and transitioning in it. So, I think he just shows his. He shows experience in his class.
He's talent. When he was on the pod, we're like, Nat, you're talent, man. Like you pull this off. You're so good.
He's too good, and he's smooth with it. But I definitely feel like, you know, Kieran has done his thing a few times. You know,
The big and tall, the 6'9" cuts, the 6'10" cuts.
Did his thing. And when I was on the show, Ant went with the classic. I think it was kind of classic, like 05, like the sweatshirt with the shirt hanging out. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah, that was back in the day. That was a very American style back in the day.
This is Skylar's favorite podcast, by the way.
I'm so into this. Also, I have a question. I really liked your glasses.
Thank you.
Who had them first? You or DeAndre Liggins?
I don't.
Same ones, right? Very similar.
I don't think he has these. These are Tom Ford, and then my others are Ray-Ban. Yeah, so I don't think he has these ones. But and I don't know the guy. But you know,
if you guys are bringing a lot of new fashion, a lot of new swag to the BBL, which is fun to see.
I'm into it.
It's part of it. You know, it's part of it. So I mean, if there's more opportunities to do that, then I'll definitely, you know, I'll show out a bit more here and there. But I definitely respect him for having the same style of faves as me. I don't know if he's a prescription though. Like I actually need glasses, you know. So
I trust that yours are prescription, and I've never trusted that his are prescription.
I think that's okay though.
Yeah, I need
whatever. It's a look.
It is a look. Yeah. Any other final? Oh, go ahead.
I think Drew was bugging with those skinny jeans at one time. White skinny.
He does a nice job.
No, I think he was bugging with the white ones.
Overall, does a nice job. Friend of the pod, Drew Lasker.
No, but it was a nice fit, and it took a lot of courage and bravery to do that, and he pulled it off. So maybe that's me, but he pulled it off. But he does a good. It was a good ski move, but I think he does a good job overall, and I like his style. And I know Drew outside of basketball and the wall and stuff like that. So he always dresses well. So
yeah,
I like that. You know,
definitely. All right, let's go on to EuroBasket. So. Skylar, I'm going to cue you up here for your question. Great. After sealing your passage to 2022 EuroBasket, man, that was a fun weekend. That was a fun qualifying window there, following a brilliant win over Germany on a last-second shot by Luke Nelson. You capped it off by beating France 94-73. Joined by your son now, Skylar.
I'm so distracted now because his son is in frame and he's so cute.
Cueing you up, Skylar. What's your question?
Sorry. I really was distracted.
Snap back into the interview. Cute baby alert.
just tell us how you and the team are, you know, feeling after qualifying for EuroBasket. How's it feel?
I mean, it's nice that it's always nice when you accomplish a goal that you set out to do. So this is maybe what, 3-4 years in the making?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think EuroBasket is every 4 years now. It used to be every 4 years now. And I think as a team, we've made the last 5 out of the last 6 EuroBaskets, but this was an important one because it's kind of been like a changing of the guard. So a lot of the guys who were involved in previous competitions, they're not there anymore. So this is kind of like, it's our team now.
Yeah.
And, guys who weren't in the squad consistently like myself or weren't getting playing time, you know, everyone's had to step up in different, you know, at different stages and different levels. And, you know, so for us to come out and do what we've done. I think the last three games we have a winning record against highly ranked teams. Mm-hmm. We've won 11 out of 13 games, our last 13 games. You know, a lot of new younger guys have been introduced into the fold and they've done well. We've had no support from the BBF, and you know, there's been a lot of turmoil within, a lot of things that we can't control. So to do what we to accomplish the goal, with all that being said, you know, we're very happy about it. But at the same time, it's we really did something that we felt was very doable, and for that something that we could accomplish. You know, we have guys who play in France, you know, the top league and the second league, and
Ovi's been there this year.
Yeah, Ovi's there this year. I mean, we know the French guys, that we played against them all the time in tournaments, you know, in the summertime. The same with Germany. I was born in Germany. Miles played in Germany. We had a couple other guys played in Germany. Gabe has played in Germany. And it's just things where, like, maybe in the past there might have been intimidation to be playing teams from another country or whatever, but through our experiences and through the things we've done in the past, we just knew there's something we could do, and we knew that we could qualify. So it's kind of just a stepping stone, if that makes sense. So we feel like we would have been more disappointed if we didn't.
Yeah.
You know, there wouldn't be any more of it too. So we actually feel like we dropped two games. Like, the first game at Montenegro, we feel like it wasn't our best showing. Mm-hmm. And then when France spanked us in November, that was, again, they jumped on us early.
I know, it's the first quarter. I mean, they had all their shots go. Yours didn't go. And then it was just kind of like, all right, like, it was just first quarter loss.
Is that, and I mean, both teams dealing with the pandemic, but, like, we had some guys who hadn't played a game since maybe February, it is what it is. Like, it was a perfect storm. Yeah. It just went really badly for us.
Yeah, I mean, it was unfortunate that the women didn't qualify. So having you follow up with those big wins, I think, was really good for British basketball. And a couple questions here. We have another audience question where, what was your reaction to that game winner over Germany? The little lefty scoop shot off the backboard. And then Mr. Jay Breezy asked, what is your favorite basketball moment ever, maybe apart from that? So walk us through that reaction, then tell us about maybe another favorite basketball moment memory.
That was a big moment, just because at the first game for, I remember the first game for Luke was difficult against France, right?
Yeah.
I remember before this game, I told him, you know, be ready for it. They're going to be super physical with you, but, you know, you can handle it. You can do it just fine. It's a great game, and then, you know, see it, like, you know, it was a special moment for him, and I was glad we was able to share it with him. But any game winning is always, like, you know, it's amazing. Like, if we just got onto the court, you know, it was like, whoa, like, you know, that was tough. And we were just happy for him in that moment, and yeah, we celebrated it well.
You saw a lot of kids on TikTok and social media recreating the shot, which is always cool to see, just inspiring that next generation.
That's, and again, that's amazing. That's the amazing part of it. You know, like, say that we lost the game, you know, like, we lose the opportunity to kind of go the game a little bit, if that makes sense, you know.
Yep.
And the respect we got from that, you know, like, even though we were supposed to have it before, like, you only get respect for what you've done. Yep. You know, so it was a really important moment. But when it happened, we didn't think about any of that. We just like, oh, shit, he made the shot. Like, you know, like, you know. And it was tough. Like, we kind of got bumped a little bit. You know, left hand scoop. That was a really tough shot. Layup. Very tough shot. I mean, Luke's got a left. He's got a good left hand, but, you know, like, that was tough.
Yeah,
that was tough. So
I recreated it with Skylar, and I think I threw it over the backboard my first try, Skylar. And it's not an easy shot in that moment.
It takes some practice.
Yeah,
it takes some practice. Yeah, but for him, and the way it went in, it didn't bounce around. Nothing, just hit the backboard, went straight down. Mm-hmm. It was super clean. That was a very tough shot.
Any other highlights? Yeah. Best favorite basketball moments ever, apart from that?
I don't know, man. Whenever you win, and you win something, you know, like, you win a championship or something, so that's always an amazing moment. Just because, like, for that to happen, like, a lot of things have to go right, you know, and not just on the day, like, for a season.
Yeah.
You know, so that's always been, those always been big moments for me. The last championship I won, we won the BBL trophy in 2019. You know? Yep. So that was huge. The year before that, I won the league in Spain. That was huge.
Wow.
Yeah, that was huge. Got the team promoted and everything. My first my favorite is still my first championship ever, and that for me it counts 100%. But like I was in college in the States, and in the summertime they make you do like the camps, right? So you can make so you can make some money. And we won the championship. My team won the championship, and I beat all the other counselors. You know, the kids bought into it. At first, I was kind of like running like a daycare. I wasn't necessarily coaching them. So I figured that, you know, they were young. They were like, I think in between 5 and 7 or 5 and 8. So I thought they just wanted to come around and mess around and play. But they were about basketball. So the more I coached them, the better they did. And we ended up winning. You know, we beat some of the teams that we're supposed to win. And, you know, they were so happy. And
I love that.
That was the first time I kind of thought to myself, oh, well, I might coach one day. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Secure the summer camp 7-year-old championship and you ride that high. That's a big moment.
Big time. It's a big time. That's on my resume. That was a big moment for me.
Well, look, now you got a little one you can coach.
Yeah. You got new players to develop.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Coaching is tough.
All right, Skylar, don't get distracted.
Okay, back to Eurobasket. This is something I've always wondered. I feel like, you know, things Americans don't like, ties, you know, waiting. What happens between now and 2022 when you play again? Like, are you guys still practicing together? Are there things that the team wants to work on in the meantime? Are you guys not going to see each other again until then? Like, what's the deal there? I've never quite understood like how far out you're qualifying and how much time goes by in between. It feels like it could be a completely different team.
I logically feel the same way, Skylar. I'm like 2022? Like where's that gap?
That is next year, brains might not be comprehending.
It was supposed to be this year, but obviously it got pushed back.
That's why
it's next year. So the next thing we have is we have 3 qualifying windows for the World Championships.
Yep.
So the first one's going to be in November. Then we have February 2022 and June 2022. And then obviously we have Eurobasket 2022.
Mm-hmm.
So so the same system we just went through to qualify for Eurobasket, we're going to go through that for the next championship. And I guess that'll kind of be our warm-up and us getting ready for the Eurobasket championships also.
Yep.
This summer, they haven't necessarily put a plan together yet, but I think they're trying to get some friendly games in together, and I think it's an opportunity to maybe bring some younger guys along, or you know, guys who haven't been given the opportunity yet, just because the windows nowadays compared to back in the day. Back in the day, we used to be together for like a month and a half, 2 months. Like now, we're together for 10 days, and there's no time for evaluation or for changes or whatever.
Yeah,
but our team, like we're a pretty close team, so most of us we're in contact all the time anyway. And like I said, it's a different kind of regime from where it was before. So we kind of know the team, if that makes sense. And but again, 2022 is a long time away, so you never know what might happen in between now and then. So we just kind of have to stay ready and just be there to support the team as best as possible, right? With whatever happens. But we just know that we have these 3 qualifying windows for the World Championships, and you know, that would be the next step. Make sure we qualify for that also, and then you know, have a good show in the Eurobasket, you know, and just go from there. Keep building what we started.
I'm hoping with this momentum, you get some more funding, do things in the summer, put some more of these together. Because you're right, the having people not play for months or weeks before the first France game. Having just like that short training windows, not being able to gel as a team, it's tough. And so hopefully that success drives a little more funding there. But to close this out, we have some more listener questions and just more about basketball in the UK in general. So Chainnet Apparel asks, what innovations could the BBL bring to reach more NBA UK fans? And because we found that there's a lot of NBA fans or BBL fans, we don't see there's a lot of crossover, where if you're an NBA fan, you might not even know the BBL exists. So what do you think could bring in more BBL fans from people who are already a fan of the NBA and basketball in general?
That's a big question.
You have 60 seconds. Go.
Fix it.
Fix it for us.
Well, first of all, Chain of Apparel, that's my guy. You know, that's a brand that I work with personally. And
who's the name behind the brand? Chain Net Apparel.
It's at Chain Net Apparel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go follow Chain Net Apparel.
Actually, just send me some stuff. It's Craig at Chain Net Apparel. Like, the stuff is dope. Look at the logo.
Oh, nice.
Oh, I really like that.
That's a cool logo.
Yeah, it's like
tune into our YouTube to see these things.
Yeah.
You change it a little bit. It's really cool stuff.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
I really like that stuff.
That's cool stuff.
Really good guy. And he loves basketball.
Nice. I love those designs.
I love that logo, yeah.
Yeah, so that's my guy, by the way. So, but one of the things he does is, you know, not only does he have a band, you know, he cares about basketball, watches basketball, is interested in basketball. And, you know, just from our collaboration, the goal is to, you know, to help get my name out in the British world a little bit and help, you know, his brand build in the basketball world also. So I think that aspect of it, I think what the reason we love the NBA so much is, you know, David Stern put a big emphasis in highlighting the players of the league, you know, because that's really where the connection comes from, not necessarily the teams, but, you know, the players and things of that nature. And as that's gone, you know, as the players have become more household names, you know, around the world and around the basketball community, the league has grown because you care about the players, you care, you have that connection, you have, you know, there's kids, for instance, who, they might not be like the diehard basketball fan or fans of, you know, the Warriors, but they know they love Steph. They love, you know, everything about Steph or everything associated with Steph and of that nature. Now, obviously, we don't have a Steph Curry in the BBL, but, you know, like to really, you know, to have moments like where we show like, or we had like the Luke Nelson game winner, you know, or things like that around the league. And I think the BBL is trying, like, you know, Selena Conway, she's done a lot of things this year with the BBL to try and highlight the players, stuff like the BBL show and like having us on Sky and things of that nature, just to build the relationship of, you know, the consumer and the players, you know, so people again feel connected to everything that's going on, because there's a lot going on, and you know, it's tough being a player, but it's also tough, like, you know, if you care about the sport, like you need accessibility to it.
Yeah,
that reason I think the NBA is so popular in the UK, because you know there's so many more outlets to kind of get your hands on it. Whereas like the BBL, even now, is, you know, it's tough to get a game. It's tough to watch a game.
Yep.
It's tough to get, you know, any kind of gear or apparel or whatever, like, so even stuff like that I just showed that, you know, it's hard to get, like, you know, your local team shirt or some stuff or whatever. So just continuing to build that relationship in between the players and the fans and the consumers and people who really care about the game, I think that'd be really important. That'd be something that, you know, should be highlighted and built on in the future, especially as, like, some of these younger guys, like, get opportunities, and guys are going straight from here to high major D1s and you know, just build that relationship, like build the players up, show that they're supported, and you know, it will help in the future.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. And you know, we've done that on the pod. We've talked to Selena about that, and it's amazing as new BBL fans coming in, where, you know, last spring we didn't know if there'd even be a season, and now there's a new BBL player, despite, you know, some of the issues they're working through it, but now you can have access to all these games. You have Sky Sports. It's the first year. Technology's hard. You have Sky Sports. You have the TikTok partnership. There's a lot more emphasis on these player stories, which is amazing to see. And, you know, we're seeing some momentum build, which is exciting.
I think guys like yourself, though, and like everyone kind of who takes the time and does media around the sport, like that's not directly like BBL media, but just people who care about the sport and people who, you know, take the time to do things like what you guys are doing. Like, I think it's very underrated, and I think it's, you know, I think it's very much needed. And I think the first person we know who did that, like around the British basketball game, was probably Sam Hoopfix.
Full-time British basketball advocate. Love Sam.
Yeah, they got. But like from there, it's just gone. And to have the more outlets we have means there's more people who care about it, which means that more people can find out about it. So like we have to make sure that we continue to support each other. And as that goes, everything else will go too.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you coming on. I think that's a great place to end it. And good luck with the rest of the season and getting healthy and getting out of isolation.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Ashley.
Thanks for having me.